Welcome to Season 3, Episode 2 of Swift Over Coffee. I'm Paul Hudson.
And I'm Michaela Caron.
And in this episode, we discuss whether it's time to start building for Apple's new Vision Pro headset.
That's, I think, what's exciting about new hardware like this is that, like, we have our ideas that we've talked about and, like, the ideas that you talk about with other people here and there, but just getting to see what other people build and you're just like, I didn't even think that you could do something like that. We asked folks what they're missing from Swift UI now that iOS 17 is out.
Genuinely, I'm on the verge of starting a social media campaign to bombard feedback with requests for a web view. Plus, like, I'm Aquaman or I'm like Ryu from Street Fighter, you know, Hadouken. So Michaela, we're now the week after WWDC. Obviously a very, very busy week. We'll talk about that shortly. How have you been spending the time after WWDC? How do you decompress after the big buzz?
So what I've been doing this week has been nothing. So right after WWDC, I took a flight to LA and I have done absolutely nothing. I've like walked along the beach and like walked along the Santa Monica Pier and I've just done nothing. I've watched some sessions here and there, but I've just been like, I want to do nothing this week and that is the only goal.
You are living the dream. I like it.
I took like vacation literally right after WWDC because I knew it was going to be a busy week with all the events and we'll talk about what like all went on. But because I knew what was going to be happening, I was just like, let's just take vacation right afterwards.
I used to do this thing where after WWDC, I'd go for like a little spa, have a manicure, have a facial, have a nice time, basically. Sadly, my local beauty parlor has closed, so I have to try and find somewhere else. And this year in particular, I know it's really sad, but this year in particular, my annual charity conference teaching Swift with UI stuff is earlier than normal. It's at the end of June. It's like in 10 days from now. So I am in full work mode, watching every video, asking lots of questions, writing tons of code. I get no break basically until the end of, start of July ideally, and when it's vacation time.
Oh man, that sounds tough because yeah, it's after the week we had at WWDC. I was just like tired. I was gone from my Airbnb that I had from like 9 a.m. until like 10 p.m. every single day. And I was just like, I just need to decompress and do absolutely nothing. So I've like casually watched some sessions. So I will watch like one session and that is pretty much about it. Let's talk about the news. So I think if we ignore WWDC for a minute, the biggest things that happened was that, because we're going to talk about it. But with that, though, one of the really interesting things is there is a community effort for WWDC Notes. So it's literally at the address like wwdcnotes.com. And it's people who are getting together and writing little summary videos of all the different sessions. So you can see, instead of actually watching, you know, the 100 some, how many session videos were out?
A lot. I think 150 or so.
Yeah. So instead of being able to, or instead of watching every single one of those, you can go to this site and see WWDC Notes and actually just read a paragraph or two or like a little longer with some graphics as well and see like what all those session videos were about. So then you can have like a nice quick read summary rather than watching like a 40 minute video, which is super nice.
Yeah. Even today, Apple has this mindset where the WWDC videos become the documentation for many things. Now this year, they've actually taken some big leaps forward for things like SwiftUI, which is great. They've done some really good SwiftUI documentation this year. But Swift Data, the brand new cool kid in the block, is kind of not documented very well at all. And so right now the sessions are the documentation. And so efforts like this from the community, and it is done by a range of folks, they're really, really valuable.
Yeah, and what's really great about it is anybody can contribute. So if you go to wwdcnotes.com and then see in the top right, there is a button that says add a new note, and you can see which session videos are missing any kind of blog posts, basically. So then anybody can contribute. There's a Slack group as well. So you can say, hey, I would like to write a note on this video because you saw that it was open. And the Slack lets others know that like you're writing that one. So then two people don't inadvertently write about the exact same thing. But because WWDC has died down a little bit now, it's probably not too big of an issue. You probably don't need to join the Slack group to actually go about writing a new note. But It does help because it lets other people who are like interested in contributing being like, hey, by the way, I am writing about this session like right now, so that somebody doesn't come in and write it like, you know, 20 minutes before you're about to go do it.
Well, listen, as much as I enjoy the sessions and seeing the notes, for me, the main thing is seeing other people, right? Sharing the hype, sharing the excitement, sharing code, seeing friends I tend to see once a year. How did you enjoy the event? Because you actually organized one of the events, right? One of the community events during the week. How did you actually enjoy the week?
Oh, man. It was a great week. It was, I knew it was coming of, it was going to be super busy, but it was also going to be super fun. Mm. So I had an absolute blast. For iOS Dev Happy Hour that I talked about last time, we typically do online monthly meetups. And then we did one of it last year. So we came back this year and did one again, where we had a meetup of like, a bunch of people just from the community, we all met up. This year, we met at a bowling alley, which was super fun. So there was one lane that we had that people could go bowling at. But then also, we just had a big open room that people could just stand and talk with other developers. And that was super, super fun.
Yeah, it was. I got to go along and it was fun meeting folks and saying, you know, what do you love about yesterday's keynote? Because it was Tuesday after the keynote. And so folks saying, oh, you know, I'm just blown away by Vision Pro. And I'm like, well, yeah, me too. But, you know, just over there is someone from the Vision Pro team. Shall I hook you up and you can ask questions? And they're like, yeah, do it. So we, you know, they were along too. And so it's folks from Apple, folks community, just mingling, just sharing the fun, because they obviously can talk by that point after the keynote. And the food, by the way, I was thinking bowling alley, it's going to be bad food. But actually, well done. You got some good food.
Yeah, it's the bowling alley itself. Had all that food and everything. So like that was all them, which was awesome. Because yeah, bowling alley food is typically not the best, but nope. This one was pretty good. So it's funny because I was there organizing it. I was like chatting with some people here and there, but we were, you know, checking people in. So like Frank and I were checking a lot of people in. And then we like took little food breaks in between. So like I went and grabbed food real quick while he was checking everybody in. And then it was funny. We inadvertently got into a competition between who was going to check in more people. I actually don't even know who won that in the end. So Frank, if you're listening, let me know how many checked in and we will see what the final number was. But I had checked in like 50 some people. He had checked in 50 some. Alex was there also checking a few people in. We ended up having like at least 150 people came to the event, which is crazy.
That's amazing.
Because last year we had just like a little bit over 100 or so. But this year we had like so many more.
And there were other great events too. You know, Mr. Yang's WWDC community event was a fantastic week-long push this time with a culminating hackathon. The breakpoints were there. The talk show live was there. iOS Swift student stars were there. And I met so many folks who told me, hey, you know, this is my first year at DubDub. What should I do? And it feels really good kind of passing on the flame a little bit, saying, you know, here is what DubDubDC looks like. You go along to the breakpoints who are supporting Women Who Code and doing live music, and it's great fun. You go to Fiesta Kit or Core Sushi or whatever. There are lots of great events that take place, and be able to say, hey, this is the kind of thing you can get involved in, because it's all there, and people love it, because even though Apple haven't said it yet, I really feel we're approaching a full week of activities now.
Yeah, and it's definitely fun that they're all community-led activities too. So instead of being like full-on Apple branded or anything, it's just like events being organized by like other developers is exactly what it is. And also Malin and Kai had organized a Core Coffee meetup every single like day of the week from Sunday to Thursday.
Yep.
Every morning they were like, hey, just grab some coffee and chat with people. So the first one that they had, I think was the first event that kicked off the week on Sunday. And there were like 50 to 80 people all in San Pedro Square. And we're all just chit-chatting again.
Yeah. And, you know, seeing the number of folks just turning up to these events, it was great. You know, I love it because I honestly do feel that just turning up to community events is half the battle for folks, you know, having the confidence to go out and meet people and get involved and just put a foot out the door and leave their comfort space slightly. It's so important. So I'm really glad to see so many folks turned up. Mm-hmm. And at DubDub, of course, we had Vision Pro, which we'll talk about shortly. But there was another big announcement, wasn't there? Another big announcement at DubDub. What was it, Michaela?
The other biggest announcement was Swift Data. Yes. And I, within iOS Dev Happy Hour, we also had a watch party. And so we got to talk about, or we all had like 50 of us, 50, 60 or so, all get together, and we were watching the keynote like live all together, which was super fun. So it's like literally everybody, what everybody who had a golden ticket was doing was watching it all together. We did the same thing of people who don't have a golden ticket. And when Swift Data was announced, like everybody just started clapping, and it was so great.
Yeah, I actually, I screamed at Apple Park when they announced Swift Data. And I had to show Adrian Eves, who also helped the Happy Hour, the video. He thought I was exaggerating. And I was like, no, here's the video of me actually screaming, you know? And I emailed Craig Federighi to apologize, saying, sorry, that was me. If you heard a loud scream, I apologize. I'm just very excited. Please pass on my gratitude and to the people who made Swift Data. They did a great job. And he wrote back. It's like 10 minutes later saying, oh, yeah, I shouldn't say what he said because he gets privacy too. But he wrote back, which is very kind of him. But it's out and it's amazing, right? It's kind of everything I hoped for. I mean, maybe they're refining the API just slightly between now and release. But for a beta one, they've come extremely close to excellent.
Yes, I really like how... one of their goals, it seems, with it was in getting away from, what was it, the XC data model that you had to do, doing something in Xcode to make your whole model. But then now we can just use Swift macros and write the model in Swift, and that's where it ends. Similar to how Swift UI is, we just write the code for what the UI is, and that's it. It's in Swift code. We don't have to do something extra like using storyboards and whatnot.
Yes. I was getting emails maybe once a month from blind developers saying, I simply cannot use Core Data because the Core Data model editor doesn't work well with VoiceOver. And I'm like, I don't know what to say. I'm really sorry it's like that. I'll complain on your behalf to Apple. I'll lobby Apple to try and do better, but it just didn't work. And of course, there was Swift Playgrounds where it didn't work there either. I'm going to guess that all these goodies are coming to Swift Playgrounds 5 at some point, you know, all the latest Swift 5.9 and observables and jazz like that would be very nice. And it becomes transformative because, you know, VoiceOver works great on iPad. And so folks can all now use Swift Data without the hassle of the model editor, without having the hassle of optionals everywhere and NS managed and all the things you don't like about Core Data, right? They've basically all gone now.
Yes. And I cannot wait to start playing with it. I have everyone. If you have the developer app by Apple, that's where you can watch all the WWDC sessions. You can bookmark different sessions and you can also like download them to your phone to watch offline, which is nice when you're like flying. But I have like every single one of the Swift Data ones bookmarked. So you can just search Swift Data and then go like boom, 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 bookmark all of them. Be like, maybe I'll watch them all. Maybe I won't watch them. Who knows? There are bookmarks, but it's nice that you can just search and see all of them. And I have them all there. Whether or not I end up watching them all, we will find out, but they're all there.
It's aspirational, as I like to say. This time, our theme is it time to start building for Vision OS and Apple's new Vision Pro device? And keep in mind, folks, we're recording this on Friday after DubDub, so it's about, you know, 10, 12 days since the keynote when we all saw Vision Pro being announced. 12 days have elapsed, almost 2 weeks now. Are we, or should we, already be thinking about building apps for Vision OS? I know what I think. What do you think, Michaela?
I think at the moment, yes, because I was not an iOS developer when the Apple Watch came out. So this, like the Vision Pro, yes, it's revolutionary and it's new for everybody, but it's like the first new product that I've ever seen, like as a developer with Apple coming out. Mm. So like I'm excited to develop for it for that purpose. And because it's new, like it's new for all of us. So because of that, like there, as a beginner, if you start developing with Vision Pro, you can get on from the very beginning and there's no dumb questions at all because it's new for all of us. So like when you ask, this is a dumb question. It's like, well, it's new for everyone. Like we all don't know what we're doing.
I think that applies just as well to app ideas too, because right now there are zero apps for the Vision Pro, right? And so there's no To-do app, there's no notes app, there's no whatever, you know, chess game, for example. We're all starting from scratch. The only folks with, you know, any actual Vision OS experience you know, are at Apple. They've been there 6-7 years working on this for a long time, and everyone else, we're all starting from scratch. And so if you kind of felt you jumped on board late to the scene, like you joined like iOS 9 or 10 or 11 or 12, you feel like you missed out on the whole wild west of app development, we're all there. We're all starting from zero. And so your new app idea, your new code, your new plan, your new whatever dream you're making is as good as anybody else's at this point.
Aw, Paul's dogs are making a lovely appearance.
Yeah, they're coming to sort of slobber on me. Right, off you go, Mutz. Good dog.
Good thing we have an audio podcast, not a video podcast. But yeah, I'm super excited to get started with it. And what is nice is we can use Swift UI to make VisionOS apps. So while it's new for all of us, it's the hardware is new, but how we go about developing apps, even when you're new to Swift UI, you can immediately jump into VisionOS. And I love that that's how they did this, rather than all of us needing to learn some brand new thing. It's we can still take some knowledge that we already have too.
Yeah, you could imagine almost before Swift UI would have AppKit, UI kit, and then something else. Not VisionKit, that's already taken by a different framework entirely by Apple, but a different UI framework for doing 3D stuff. And they haven't done that. They've said, listen, actually, Swift UI is the best way to build apps for VisionOS. To the point where large parts of VisionOS, all the core system apps, are written in Swift UI. If you do UI kit work, you're running UI kit apps for VisionOS, which you can do, then your UI kit controls are often backed by Swift UI controls behind the scenes. It's a complete inversion of what we have on iOS. And so Swift UI is really making this whole process transformative, because you can just jump in with the Swift UI you know already and do good work. And if you just tailor it a little bit, like you do for macOS or watchOS or tvOS, little tweaks here and there, for example, the glass background effect modifiers in new division OS, then you'll get a nice experience just with a few hours of work, maybe. It's a really slick experience. So I'm just so glad they've done that. And of course, if you want to, you can go further, right? You can do, is it volumes, they call it?
Yes.
Spaces, the more immersion stuff?
Yeah, they have three different like ways to describe what you're doing when you're developing a VisionOS app. And that's windows, which is what you think of let me just take my app and it's just floating in space, but it's a 2D like window that's just floating there.
Right.
That's the first way to make an app. Then you have volumes. So this is you can pin something in a 3D space, as I understand it. But it's just like, think of it as a box pretty much around yourself, and you can place things within that box. And then the last one we have is spaces. So that is where you do, what is it, turning the dial on the Vision Pro, like the crown at the top of it, is where you do that, and you will have like full immersion into that space. You could do full immersion actually, and you could also do partial immersion.
Yeah, and having tried it, the difference between the two is quite remarkable. You know, I did the whole Mount Hood thing where you sort of see a panoramic view of Mount Hood and you turn the digital crown. The experience is bizarre. It feels like Mount Hood's like a fog leaking out of the picture all around you, just seeping into your space, bigger and bigger and bigger until it's just totally surrounding you. It doesn't just like scale up bigger and bigger. It just expands in a beautiful way. And so it really blurs the line between this whole partial or full immersive thing. And it adds the bigger blurry lines of how Swift UI fits into it. Because it's not as though it's 2D or 3D or whatever. There's all sorts of gradations between that where you can upgrade in incremental steps, I think.
Ooh, that sounds so fun. I'm so excited. It's you're the only one out of, you know, us two who got to test it. So you get to like know how it all works. And then I just get to imagine through the words that you have how it actually works and what it feels like.
I made a long video, like a 22-minute long video, just ranting about my experience with the headset. Because it's hard to explain. And that's part of the interesting thing, because if I was able to say to you, oh, you know, it's like PSVR, just better, then Apple won't really have succeeded in doing what they want to do. Because Apple like going, wow, shock and awe, incredible new stuff, pow, and really it's blown the top off whatever's out there already. And that's kind of what's happened. We haven't got a way to compare it to Oculus, because it makes Oculus look like a toy in comparison. You know, the number of patents, they've filed at 5,000 or so of innovations, you can kind of see them like, oh, that's cool. Oh, that's clever. Oh, wow, what's that? Again and again and again. Oh,
that sounds, yes, so fun. And I believe it's what we heard is that they are going to be releasing what are they're calling developer kits, which is like, I don't believe it's like a test version. It's like a full version of the Vision Pro, but it's only accessed like to developers only for either a specific amount of time, or it's for like before it actually comes out to consumers, so that like as developers, we can test on the real hardware what it looks like to actually use the Vision Pro if you're somebody who's trying to make an app for it. And you've never even used the hardware itself yet.
Yeah, they've done it before a few times. You know, I had the TVOS DTK developer toolkit. And that was basically, you paid like $1 to get an early, I think it was a fourth gen Apple TV. The first one that actually ran TVOS apps. I had one of those. I had the Apple Silicon DTK. That was, I think, $500. And this one I expect will be $3,500.
Just a little.
Yeah, it'll happen, and it gives folks a chance to try things out and build apps, right, and try and ship something that might actually end up on the VisionOS App Store. And speaking of VisionOS apps, I'm not sure how much you're willing to share. I have a stupid app idea that I'm going to build straight away just to have fun with the Vision Pro. And it is really, really simple. I want to put on the Vision Pro and effectively become a superhero so I can sort of wave my hands and make firebolts or flames or lightning. Be whatever you want out of my hand. Like I'm Aquaman or I'm like Ryu from Street Fighter, you know, Hadouken or whatever. That kind of, you know, that stupid effects just for fun to enjoy 3D particles bouncing around the room. Maybe I have like little targets and stuff they have to try and aim for. That's what I plan to build on day one if I get a DTK. Have you got an idea? Are you willing to talk about your idea?
Oh, I love your idea. I cannot wait to try that. It sounds great. And then, yeah, I have a couple floating around, but one that's like not new, because I have one that I know I want to build that's still not a new idea, but I don't want to say it just yet because, you know, I need to go buy the domain first.
Right.
But the idea that I want to build for Vision Pro is playing chess instead of just like placing the chessboard, you know, in a 3D space and then playing like an AR version of chess. It's imagine that you're actually on the chessboard. So like blow up the chessboard so it's like life size, pretty much like you're in Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. Mm. And you can like be a chess piece on the chessboard. So then like you can like knock down a queen or something. Like that's how like you'll play, is like you actually walk across a chessboard to play the game. And that I think sounds super fun.
It sounds like a lot of fun. It really does. And I think it'll be interesting to see the kind of experiences that get unlocked when developers ship Vision Pro, because we can speculate, we can guess, we can have a think, we can imagine. But honestly, I think there are folks out there with ideas way beyond our wildest dreams at this point. I saw an example today, from Jordi Bruin, who wants to be able to sort of pinch on lights in his room, like actually on the light itself, connect via Bluetooth to like a Philips Hue bulb to turn the light bulbs off just by gesturing. I know, right? It's a great idea. Oh, it never occurred to me. You know, Jordi's a very creative chap. And so I look forward to seeing what he does too.
Yes, I think what's exciting about new hardware like this is that we don't, like, we have our ideas that we've talked about and like the ideas that you talk about with other people here and there, but just not knowing and getting to see what other people build, and you're just like, I didn't even think that you could do something like that, because that's taking the step of Vision Pro of, oh, I can do some kind of gesture, and then it's taking it a step further of, oh, what if I connect it to another API of something completely different? And that is just wild to me.
Okay, let's leave it there and go on to Open Ballot, aka name pronunciation time.
This is where we have asked people what is missing from SwiftUI after iOS 17, after we just had DubDub and get to know all the new things. What do people think is still missing from the framework to be able to like catch up to UIKit or do more past UIKit? So first off, we have Kevin Hayes and Ian Waters. They say that they would both like better selection binding, so we can actually read and set selection within text fields.
Yeah, so obviously you can focus text fields right now, but you can't say like where is the insertion cursor and how much text is selected. And I guess the problem is, it's basically more and more bindings being passed in behind the scenes, more and more overloads for the text field initializers, presumably.
Yeah, that would be nice, because I know you can get, I'm not sure if this is exactly what it is, where you can have like inserting a dollar sign or a currency symbol before or after typing something. I know that that's something in UIKit, but I think it's still very hacky doing that in SwiftUI.
Yeah, the closest we get is the token support in Searchable, where you can detect particular tokens being typed in, like hashtags and similar. But yeah, no, there's no support for selection and insertion bindings, but hopefully in 18.
Next version. So Justin Farrell is also looking at wanting more community documentation when it's like blogs and tutorials that focus on the SwiftUI lifecycle, because like when, what was it? iOS 14, 15, we had just the app delegate, and then we had the scene delegate, and then we had briefly both of them, briefly one of them, and then now we just have the SwiftUI lifecycle. And seeing more documentation on how that works, I think would be super useful as well.
Yeah, I agree. Get to work, Michaela.
Ryan Lintott would like to see scroll view with Zoom. So we can do magnified gestures, but then also being able to track the position and like handle panning with Zoom with SwiftUI would be great, because I know we did get some updates with it, but still, it's being able to do like fine tune and do very specific things with scrolling would be super, super nice.
Yeah, and the ScrollView API has been developed dramatically this year. There's a lot of new things in there, like scrolling anchors and scroll transitions and so much more. And so clearly, they're very, very focused on making this API better. So hopefully, Ryan, go and file your feedback. Be clear, be specific, give an actual use case that can follow and implement. And hopefully, they'll grant your wish for next year.
We all got to file feedback. That should be the end of this podcast, is file feedback. Goodbye. Thank you for listening. And then next, Sarah Reichelt would like to see imports from AppKit and UIKit for a web view, because right now we do get very basic web view stuff with SwiftUI, but nothing past that, really.
Yeah, this is my pick, too. This is a sore point for me, because SS Safari View Controller or any kind of WK web view at all does not exist. There's a open source version of WebView in the actual WebKit repository, or at least there was, and there isn't one in SwiftUI, and we're now quite a few years into SwiftUI. So having web support missing is annoying, and I actually asked about it at WWDC. They had the Meet the Team section, and I went to speak to Swift Data, spoke to SwiftUI, we went through a whole bunch of code and questions, yada, 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 and I had 5 minutes left over in the Meet the Team section. So I ran to the Safari section to speak to them and said, hey, folks, love Safari, love your work. Could you please produce an official web view supported by Apple using SwiftUI? And they made a bit of a joke out of it. They said, oh, yeah, look, the time's up. Look, they're taking the sign away. This is not really the Safari lab. Ha, ha, ha. I'm like, and I get it. They live there. They work there. This is a normal working day for them. But like the cost of me flying out there for this one day, you know, hotels and flights and food and yada, 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 it's a lot. And so it was a little bit insulting. Like, come on, just telling me that and then, you know, file a feedback. I filed a feedback a year ago. It's been ignored. I'm telling you on your face. And so I think genuinely, it's advance warning for the Apple folks who are listening, genuinely, I'm on the verge of starting a social media campaign to bombard feedback with requests for a web view. So this particular person who told me to file feedback gets 100 in their face saying, please, please, please add a web view. Grr.
You can make that start trending. Hashtag, we need web view.
Yes.
Wait, so there's not a native web view for SwiftUI? You have
correct
to use
there's no
UIKit
native web
or
view.
AppKit?
Yep.
Oh.
WebKit, yeah.
Oh, I thought there was. Interesting.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, I see.
Like 2019 version 1, 2020 version 2, 2021 version 3, 2022 version 4. This is now version 5, the fifth year of changes, and still no web view.
That can be somebody's app idea. If you don't have an app idea, that can be yours, as you can make a SwiftUI web view for us all. Next, Andy Ibanez said that they can't believe that there is no async image initializer that takes in a URL request. So they have a ticket out there and there's been no response, but that is their hope. And that sounds nice as well, because that is one of the basic things that we do within iOS apps all the time is load images.
Yeah, and I really thought the following year they'd add things like caching. So we'd specify a cache policy for images, like save forever, save for 3 months, save for whatever, until the app exits. But nope, they released async image and then nothing since.
That's sad. Maybe one day. We'll get it soon, hopefully. Jose said maybe they were delusional, but was there some kind of backwards compatibility with iOS 13 about certain things?
Ah, so what I think they're referring to is the back deployable system that's introduced in Swift a while ago in order to allow people to do code that works earlier than it was written for, so they can back deploy back to iOS 13, for example. And this time, the team have worked very hard on that. There's a new way of referring to colors and image resources. You can just say image.dog, for example, rather than dog as a string. There's a compile time safety there. They've added a new smaller, simpler ways of making rectangles and rounded rects and capsules and circles. And they are back deployed. They go back several versions, in fact. So where possible, the team have back deployed stuff. However, the real problem here is that the back deployable system in Swift only backports functions. It can't backport new types.
Oh,
and so anywhere they've had to introduce a new type, it simply cannot be backported. So I'm glad they've tried and they've put a lot of work in there, but it's not going to be perfect.
Got it. I know the preview macro was something that got back deployed. I'm not sure how far back it goes, but I know that's something that is back deployed, because that's really nice that you can do, you can now use previews for UIKit view controllers.
Yes, it's a big improvement, and that's powered by Swift macros.
Chris Wu says that he wishes we can do more with app storage, the property wrapper for like things like saving color right out of the box and not having to do any kind of extension stuff, which I totally agree. That sounds super nice.
It does, but it turns out it's super tricky, because I thought the same thing. App storage to color, because you could have a color picker view, right, and let them select a color. But you couldn't save it anywhere to disk because it wasn't codable. You couldn't read the red, green, and blue values. You couldn't use app storage. It was really hard to use. And I'm like, why is it so hard to use? So I asked the Swift UI team, and they said, well, what's happening is color by itself, like color.red, doesn't have a specific meaning, because it's different slightly in light mode and dark mode. Like the red shade they use or the blue shade they use is different slightly in light and dark mode. And when you factor in things like RGB or display P3, what color are you trying to save? What should it actually look like? And so in iOS 17, they've added a new API, Color Resolved.
Ooh.
Which is where you say to the color itself, hey, resolve yourself. Give me your color values in this environment. Light mode or dark mode, display P3, sRGB, who knows what. And it'll say, okay, in that environment, I am this R, this G, this B. And you can then use that to bounce back to a regular color later on. So it's actually surprisingly hard. So yeah, it sounds easy. Oh, app storage color. Apparently not.
I like how it sounds like what they just came out with was just like, color, can you just like figure it out for us? Like just figure it out and then that's it. That's all we need.
I genuinely love it when lots and lots of Swift UI internal work happens for like one line of code for us. It's so nice.
Yeah, definitely. And that goes into what could be really nice from Jan Stelik, has said that they would like for large text views, we can have an option to like justify the text that's in that.
Right, so full justification. So it sort of sits squarely left to right in the paragraph. I mean, what can I say? Yes, that'd be great. Get to it, Apple.
For the last bit, Michael License says that if we read out messages, his message to the SwiftUI team is that he loves them. Thank you for the reintroduction of SwiftUI and reinvigorating him with his desire to build iOS apps. The ease at which you can bring apps to life has been a joy, and thank you so much for all the work that you put in.
And that brings us to the end of the episode. Thank you so much for listening along. Our open ballot next time was going to be a big one, a controversial one. Do new developers still need to learn UIKit? We'd love to hear your views. Watch out for us on social media. We'll post the question online in a week or so. Reply to that. We'd love to feature your views. Please do tell your friends, subscribe, give it a try, and of course, leave a review. Until next time, folks, take care.
See ya.